This is an interview with Miss Elizabeth Horn at her home in Savannah. The interviewer is Barbara Hendry, and this is August 20th, 1992. This is tape number CB/019BH. The first thing I'll ask you, Elizabeth, is when you were born.
I was born April the
13th, 1903. And where was that?
In Pulaski County, Georgia. Hawkinsville is the county seat.
And when did you come to Savannah?
I came to Savannah November 4th, 1922.
And what brought you to Savannah?
I came to Savannah to get a nurse training.
Okay. What motivated you to decide to become a nurse?
I was reared in rural Georgia where farming and cotton was the only produce that was for market. The boll weevils came and just ate up everything. At that time I was at Central City College in Macon, Georgia. Consequently, we didn't make any cotton and I couldn't go back to school, so I had to resort to the next best thing, which was nurse training, where I could work my way through.
So it was kind of an economic reason that
yes.
motivated you.
Yes.
You saw it as a way to get earn your way through school and
yes.
get trained to do something. Was it difficult to get admitted to the school?
No, it was not. As I said before, it was a question of my not being able to go back to college. And the minister at my church talked to me and he said he saw that life was going to be wasted. And he said, why don't you take nurse training? And I asked him, I told him I didn't have any money. And he said, you can work your way through. And he gave me the address of Charity Hospital. And this was the second Saturday in October 1922. And I wrote them, and I got an immediate reply. And they told me I had to have two recommendations and a physical. And I got that and sent it. And then they answered and said I could enter on the 4th of November, 1922. And that I did.
That was very fast.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had to have a physical and two recommendations tomorrow.
So actually, if it hadn't been for this minister, you may not have thought of doing this.
Uh-uh.
So he was influential.
Yeah.
Sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know any other people who were nurses?
At that time, I didn't.
No. So here you were, a young woman, let's see, 19, 22 minus 3. How old were you?
19.
Mm-hmm. Coming to Savannah by yourself?
By myself.
How did you travel to Savannah?
At that time they had those short railroads and I came in on the MDNS. And the folks were migrating north then. And when I got to the Union Station, they were calling these trains going all out west, north and west. And I sat there and a man came and asked me where was I going. And I told him I was coming in training at Charity Hospital. And he said, your mother live in? I said, yes. He said, she don't know she's sending you to a whole house. And that frightened me, and I sat down and I cried. And the man who was calling trains, after he got a chance, he came and asked me where I was going, and I told him. And I was crying, and this man, he was a cell man, and he said to me, he said, lady, your mother living, I told him yes. He said, she sent you here to get a piece of paper and you go, he said, you ain't got nothing to do with it, but nobody else do. You come in here to get a trade and take that piece of paper back to your mother. And he said, now the man that told you that, what he wants to do is to take you to a whole house.
This was after you arrived in Savannah?
I arrived in Savannah, hadn't gotten to the hospital. And he said, now, at that time, the automobiles was few. He said, the hacks are down at the riverfront. There's a ship just come in. And he said, they're licensed drivers, and when they come, I'm going to put you in a hack and send you to Charity Hospital. You go down and get that piece of paper and carry it back to your mother. And that's what I did.
So this was very unusual for a young girl to leave home
alone.
In that period.
I had no experience at all.
Was your family worried, you know, were they favorable, or did you have to talk them into letting you come?
Yeah, well, I was raised without a father. My father died when I was 2 years old. I didn't know the care of a father. So the only somebody I knew was the care of the mother and my grandfather and the uncles and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Some was in favor of it and some wasn't. And being in the rural, they said I was going to take nurse training. They didn't know the definition for it. Some of them said it was a woman who was going to be traveling on a train as a spokeswoman and everything. My grandfather came to talk to my mother to find out just what it was.
And so it was that little known during that period, what a nurse was, or a nurse did.
And when he understood and everything, he came and brought me to the station and put me on the train.
So caring for sick people, that sounded like a good trade.
Mm-hmm.
And to you too, you liked the idea of it?
Mm-hmm.
So you finally made your way to Charity. You got there safely.
Yeah.
And what was it like when you first arrived at the hospital?
Well, it was at night and everything, and of course I didn't see the officials till the next morning. But they made me welcome and explained to me and everything. And at that time, your nurse training, you had to be in the hospital. And your first 3 months of probation, and you were on trial. If you didn't come up to it, then they didn't accept you. And that was one thing I had never thought about, that I was going to ever have to come in contact with a dead person. And the first person that died, see, I was a probationer, and the senior nurse took me. And I never had my hand on a dead person or anything. And I didn't let her know, but I was hysterical. And that's been 69 years ago. But I remember the patient. I remember his name. His name was Mr. Macon. Mm-hmm. And she told me that, she said, now he is, she said, if you talk to him, you can move his limbs. And she talked to him, and she stretched his arm out and everything. But Lord, I didn't sleep.
Was that soon after you had arrived had to meet this?
That was during my probation.
Oh, during the
first 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And but that was an experience. But I couldn't let her know that I was afraid, because she would have reported, and I wouldn't have passed, see?
Okay. So you knew that was a test of your will or strength.
And I said, whenever I got to be a senior, I was going to be a little different. And I was, but as I said before, then when I made my probation months and I was put on a ward, and I was praying, asking the Lord not to let anybody die on me. A leader died on me. She developed tetanus. Her name was Mrs. Parker, and she was from Millen, Georgia. Mm-hmm. Lord, I nursed that leader so hard and prayed and asked the Lord to let her live through. But she passed on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so afraid. And it was at night, pouring down rain. She was in a private room. And I knew if I didn't prepare her for the undertaker, they was going to send me home. Mm-hmm. And I went and looked out the door, and it was pouring down rain. And I asked the Lord to give me some strength. And I got her ready for the undertaker. And that fear went. From then on, I never was.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. had any more fear.
The Lord answered that prayer
yeah.
and helped
mm-hmm.
her to get over that.
And I remember her name was Miss Parker, and she was from Millen, Georgia. Mm-hmm. I'm a sweet patient, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some things you just remember.
So when you first arrived, or during your training, did you actually lived at the hospital
yes,
with
yes.
the other training
yeah.
nurses?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Usually there would be two nurses in a room.
So you shared a room with another student
yeah.
nurse.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like to live there? Was it comfortable? Was it?
Yes, it was comfortable. I'm going to tell you one thing. It was a lot of work in it.
Mm-hmm. This was in the old wooden building,
the old
right?
wooden building.
Yeah.
And you had to, I mean, you worked.
How do you mean? Give us some examples.
In other words, like cleaning the bathroom mm-hmm. and all those utensils and everything and scrubbing. And I remember one day I was scrubbing the bathroom and I had all these things and then I thought, how could I make it? And somebody said, you remember you're supposed to take a piece of paper back home to your mother. And I asked the Lord to give me strength. Mm-hmm. And he did. And when I finished with honors and everything.
So the student nurses had to also clean the
yes,
hospital
yes.
and your dorm space?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Then, ooh, Lord.
You don't have to do that today, do you?
No.
She has it easy, I think, comparatively.
You had to stay in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
If you had training in quarters for the nurses.
Did they have any rules about you coming in at a certain time
oh,
at
yes,
night?
Oh, yes. By all means,
thing?
Yes.
What, was that like?
Let me see now. I believe that if you went to the movie or what, I believe it was 10:30 or 11 o'clock. And if you were 2 minutes late, you were punished.
You would get points off or
yes,
you have
ma'am.
To do extra work.
You got some hours, maybe an afternoon off or something, they take that from you.
So that was quite strict.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess some of the girls might have had some young suitors or
yeah, they did.
Boyfriends.
They did. They did.
But they had to be back by the right time.
Yes, Lord. I remember we, in coming to the, in the country, went to church, Sunday school and everything. And if your time was no, you got no consideration of the church or anything. But this particular Sunday, we were off and I went, two or three of us went to Tabernacle Baptist Church. And coming back, we looked at the clock and the clock wasn't right. And when we got almost to the hospital, they were begging telling us to run, run, run. We were running late. We were 2 minutes late. And they were going to punish us. And they had a student program at one of the white hospital nurse training, and they wanted a student from our school. And the superintendent of nurses sent me, and that was the only reason I didn't get punished. And so I went through the 2 years and I was never punished.
Mm-hmm.
But
sounds like a very good record.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was manual labor in it.
How many other student nurses were there with you at that time?
In my class, there was about 15.
Okay.
But only four of us graduated. It fell by the wayside.
So it sounds like it was a very strenuous program of both manual work and academic work.
You had to study because we had those different doctors who taught different subjects.
Do you remember any of them, especially any of the instructors?
Yes, I remember Dr. Blackman. He was superintendent of the hospital, and he taught material medicine. He was very good, and Dr. Love, Dr. Milton. I can't remember the exact subject Dr. Milton taught. But one day in class, he said, y'all can say you can take records if you want to, or you don't have to. And the next, and he came back, nobody didn't take no records, and he said, I just was trying y'all out to see how much sense you had and see how much memory you had. You see, he told us we didn't have to take no records unless we wanted to, what he was saying and everything. But boy, he was a good instructor.
Dr. Milton?
Dr. Milton. Mm-hmm. He was very good. Mm-hmm. We had some good...
So what was like say a normal day in the life of a nursing student there? What would you do throughout the day? When would you do what? Just go through a daily schedule.
We went to work, reported at 7 o'clock, and you got 2 hours off. Mm-hmm. Doing, and you didn't get, in other words, it was from 7 to 7, but in that 12 hours, you got 2 hours off. Mm-hmm. And well, as I said, your duties, as you worked in time, that laborious work was lifted. You didn't have to.
So as you got further along,
yeah,
in the studies,
mm-hmm,
you got to do more patient
and
care.
More patient and records and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then you had time in obstetrics and then in surgery, and it was a small hospital, but you got a beautiful experience, and particularly in obstetrics too. And one time I was interested, and I said I thought I wanted to major in obstetrics or surgery.
Mm-hmm.
I love surgery.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And those doctors, they had to know everything and know the doctors and know what they wanted and have it right there.
Right.
If you didn't, someone was tough, they'd curse you.
You sound like you had experience like that.
I've seen it done. What are you talking about? So the hospital itself, as well as the faculty and staff and the students, were all black?
Yeah. But we had some white doctors.
White.
But the training school was all.
And did some other girls come from outside of Savannah also?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
they came from all around
all
Georgia?
All around Georgia and other places too. Somebody
is this one of the few places that black students could come? And it was all girls who were training as nurses?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was also another black hospital here, Georgia Infirmary.
They didn't offer any training, though.
Oh, yes,
mm-hmm,
they did.
They did?
Yeah, they offered training.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, Georgia Infirmary was founded through slaves.
Mm-hmm.
The First African Baptist Church is now, mm-hmm, was a white church there. This was in slavery time.
Mm-hmm.
And two of the deacons of the church, the white church, beat their slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there was not even anything to cover a wound or anything. And one of these slaves, they beat, he died. And when they had them up in church, they didn't turn those deacons out of the church. This is a white church. And the minister there was a Reverend Williams. And he left the church and told them he would never return. And he went over and bought that land at Georgian, for Georgian Infirmary sits now. For it was organized, and he did it to take care of slaves. They wasn't even a bandage or nothing for the slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And Reverend Williams founded and gave the ground. And this building over there now, the Williams Coat,
mm-hmm,
I think it's a grandnephew of his, is a member of that
That's how George Infirmary was found.
That's fascinating. I had not read that yet about George.
And it was on there. It was never to be used for anything but to take care of slaves, black folks. Mm-hmm. And they had a time getting it where they could change that charter. And the charter was up at the end of the building there.
And I know Charity was, well, it was first the McCain.
McCain.
It was called McCain when you were there, wasn't it?
No.
It had changed to Charity by then?
Yeah. See, McCain, after he got it organized and everything, he went back. He went back to foreign country.
Yeah, I'd read that he was from the Caribbean or the West Indies or something.
Well, he went back.
I also read that his wife was one of the first black female
doctors
in the country. Alice McCain, I think, or I forget her first name.
Yeah.
So you didn't have a chance
them.
No, they were long gone.
Long
when,
gone.
When you
but the first superintendent of nurses we had, her name was Mary Long. And when I went, it was Alicia W. Salter. Mm-hmm. The superintendent of nurses. Mm-hmm. She was very strict and very positive and and I shall never forget when I was finishing, she counseled me and she told me, she said, Miss Horn, she said, you're gonna make a good nurse, she said, but you won't make a good night nurse. See, 'cause you were born in a country where folks went to bed
early.
He got up early.
Well, sun down, huh?
Yeah. And I did just a little private duty night work. But at a certain time of night, I don't care who it is, you get sleepy. And I never wanted to do night duty. I did some, but not very much.
So you completed this 2 years of working 12 hours a day, which that involved the manual labor, the classes, the patient care. Was that 6 days a week that you did that, or how many days a week?
It was the year round, period. Well, no days of the week, it was the year round.
Even on Sundays?
Yeah.
Well, someone had to be in the hospital on Sunday, but you didn't have like 1 day a week off that you remember.
Yes, you had a half a day.
A half a day.
Then when I was working there as a registered nurse, you'd have a day off. And I remember I used to always be off on a Monday.
So all your weekends you were mostly working. Now, something you said earlier, you said you went there because you could get paid. Did you get your expenses paid, or did they actually pay you a little extra while you were
all paying? They gave us was $1 a month.
Plus room and board, and
room
that
and
was
board.
It?
Yeah, and they furnished the uniform.
And you eat? Oh, your room and board, please.
And shoes?
They didn't furnish the shoes. They didn't furnish the shoes.
Well, $1 a month would hardly buy you any shoes.
No, it would. They said it would buy stamps. And we got $1 a month. But at that time, you got patients. I got a lot of tips.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
So, how did that work? If a patient liked you, they'd leave you a...
Sometimes they would, they'd give you a check or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. So, about how much a month do you think you earned in tips on an average?
Well, it varied.
Depend who's in there,
I guess. And then when I was graduating, naturally, a lot of the patients read about it, and they would come and bring me money when I was graduating. My sister sent me Maria O'Fair, my brother sent me Maria O'Fair, and my mother. And then these folks, friends and everything, excuse me for the expression, I saw myself as being nigger rich. Most money I'd ever had.
So did the graduation take place inside a charity hospital?
Graduated when we graduated, at St. James AME Church.
Hmm. On the corner of West? Wait a minute.
It's on East Broad now, but it used to be over there near Reynolds Street over there, not far from where the Piggly Wiggly school is now.
What are you talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
was any of your family able to come up and see the graduation?
No.
They couldn't afford
and automobiles
to make
was very, very few then. And an undertaker put his carriage, and it had costumes all around it. And these horses took us to this, and we were in our uniforms and caps and everything. Boy, I felt so good.
And did the superintendent of nurses cap you, or who actually did the capping?
They capped you. See, after you your first 3 months. Mm-hmm. Then, and as you progress, then you capture and everything. And Father McGlone that gave us the diplomas, he was interested in the hospital. He was an Episcopal minister, Father. He was white.
What was his name, Father?
Father McGlone.
McGlone.
Okay. Short fella, but he gave. The plume gave us our diploma.
Oh,
mm-hmm. And he was at the graduation, and he used to come to the hospital. Folks who was interested in the hospital and the work and everything, preachers and doctors, and Father McGlone was one of them, and I always remembered him.
He sounds like he took a special interest in the nurses and the students.
And then there was another Reverend. He passed at the Congregation of Church. Oh boy, his name went from the Dead Creek. Reverend Braithwaite. No, he was not a congregation, he was an Episcopal. Reverend Braithwaite.
Okay.
Now he was colored.
Mm-hmm.
And he took a tremendous interest in Charity Hospital. And when they rebuilt the Brick Hospital, he was the instigation of getting all of these big donations from a lot of white folks and concerns and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Father Braithwaite.
It's good to have these names.
He was an Episcopal minister. He passed St. Matthew now, but it was St. Stephen's then. And it was on the east side.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one on the west side. And later years they combined and made it one, St. Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
And this one on the west side was St. Augustine. And on the east side was St. Stephen. Mm-hmm. Father not my grandfather. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked with Charity Hospital. Never forget him.
I think the ministers were heavily involved in the fundraising
building.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Reverend Braithwaite was one of the big ones, and then also the Jewish men folks took a lot of interest in it and gave a lot of money for it.
Jewish community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I know you mentioned that it was when you were there as a student in the older wooden building. There weren't that many patients. It was a smaller building. About how many patients was the capacity in the old building, in the wooden building? Just average.
I imagine for anywhere from 60 to 75 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, the city made an appropriation and the county made an appropriation. And you had a city patient and county patient, but no one was never to know who a patient was, I mean, so far, whether it was a city or a county or what.
And
so everybody would be treated fairly, that's what you're talking about?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also there were some paying patients.
Yeah,
too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, paying patients. Mm-hmm. And we had a few private rooms and then semi-private rooms.
So those were more for the paying patients.
And I remember the semi-private rooms was $10.50 a week.
And that was very expensive in those
bags,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it seems so cheap.
You pay that much for a bag of IV fluid these days.
$10.50 a week for a private room.
Who were the people who mostly used the private rooms? Professional people from the community? People who had good jobs, I guess?
And then another thing, that folks would carry insurance. You carry 25 cents a week. And they pay you $5 a week.
Okay.
For sick benefit. Okay. And some folks care enough to pay the hospital bill and the doctor bill too.
You don't think of that as back then.
But see, $5 a week wouldn't mean nothing now. Mm-hmm. But it was a whole lot then.
It would go a much longer way.
Mm-hmm.
But you as staff, as you're saying, it didn't matter if someone was in a ward or in a private room, they got the same care
and everything. No, it was never whether he was private or semi-private or whether he was city or county patient.
And were patients selected according to what was wrong with them, or were all problems treated there, all...
Yes, unless you had something communicable, they'd have to be isolated.
Like TB or something, right?
Uh-huh, and venereal disease and things like that.
So was there an isolation room in the hospital?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then after they were discharged, they would fumigate.
Okay. Before the building of the new brick building, do you remember any bad outbreaks of any kind of disease or problem?
Now, this particular patient that I told you about that was from Millen, Georgia, she evidently they were good livers because she was well-dressed and she wore a beautiful coat suit and everything. They seemed to have been in good financial circumstances. And she was operated on and developed tetanus. That's lockjaw.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, I nursed that lady. I hated to see her die.
Mm-hmm.
How she got that lockjaw, I don't know. But she developed lockjaw. And mm-hmm. See, when you get tetanus, all your everything is locked.
And so that was had to do with the surgery. Something happened during the surgery.
I just don't know.
I know that. And that was in your early days.
In the early
days. Yeah.
And she was paying $10.50 and then had to move her into a private.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's some things and some patients and everything you'll never forget,
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after you graduated, did you then continue as an RN at Charity?
Well, see, I wasn't from here. I was up from rural. My mother had moved to Macon, and I went to Macon and started sales and do private practice. And I was called back to the hospital here at Charity to serve as the assistant head nurse.
Well, how long were you working in Macon before they called you back?
About 6 weeks.
Mm.
They must have thought very highly of you.
Uh-huh.
Didn't want to let you go.
They told me that I was the youngest graduate on the staff, and I was selected.
Because you must have been only about 21 when you graduated.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, where did you all take state board at?
In Atlanta.
In Atlanta, too?
Mm-hmm.
Same
mm-hmm.
place.
You have to go to Atlanta still
mm-hmm.
to do the
same
thing
more. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That must have been a stressful time, thinking about that test.
But now back to the state board, we were a two-year training.
Mm-hmm.
But the state passed the rule that you had to have 3 years. Then the state said they didn't hold the students responsible for serving 2 years. We had met the requirements of the institution, and we didn't have to make up that year.
That was later that they changed
yeah.
the requirements.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
because we were not responsible for, because we had met the requirements of the of the institution.
So you left your mom in Macon and came back to Savannah?
Uh-huh. And then later years, I did public health. And then I brought my mother here. My mother came and lived with me here. And she died here.
So as a very young woman, you were the assistant director of nursing charity. What were your duties in that position? What was your responsibility?
You were responsible for whatever. In other words, you assist the superintendent and the surgical patients. I was most responsible for dressing them and whatever. And then you had your diet, the kitchen and everything. By the way, when we were in training, we had to serve time in the kitchen. You know,
I was going to ask you about that, about preparing meals for yourselves and the patients when you lived there. Did the nursing students and nurses do that too?
Yeah, a student nurse served in the kitchen 2 weeks at a time. But of course you had to supervise and everything.
Were the student nurses actually preparing the food?
Under the direction of your supervisor, the instructor. And there's a box right here. See that colored box there on right there.
Right
there.
Did you drop something?
I dropped some hot grease on it.
All those years? It sounds like your training was more broad than a nurse's training today, as far as having to learn how to do the food preparation. Would you say so? Or?
Yeah, and by the way, in the hospital, in most institutions, folks would steal or do something. And I had this money, and a girl, she came from Florida. And she went haywire, and she was around in the street, and she came back to the hospital and stole some shoes and clothes of mine.
No, this was one of the students who went off.
Yeah.
Off the
and
her locker
she,
a little bit.
She someone told me that she had them and where she was, and I got a cab and went there, and she wasn't there, but they told me where she was. And I went where she was, and she was sitting playing a piano. And when I walked in, and she looked around, she said, "Oh, hello." I said, "How you do?" She said, "I'm all right." And I said, "You're just who I'm looking for." She said, "What you looking for me for?" I said, "You got all my shoes and stockings." And she said, "Oh, no, I don't have on your shoes and stockings." I said, "Yes, you do." And so I left, and I went and got a detective. His name was Detective Parker, and she knew that I worked in the day, so she'd be out in the day, and at night she figured. And she, two men, one night, she beat them out of some money, and then reported them to the law saying that they attempted to rape her. And they carried these men to jail. I had finished training then. And this night about 11:30, the phone rang and told me somebody a white man wanted me at the phone. And I said, "For what?" And I went to the phone and he asked me who I was. And I told him, "Yes." He asked, "Did I know this girl?" And I told him, "Yeah." He said, "What you know about her?" I told him, "Well, she stole my shoes." And he said, "Oh, gee." He said, "You know, she has had these two men arrested saying they attempted to rape her." He said, "If you come down to the courts in the morning, you will free these men." And I said, "Oh, no, sir, no, sir, I ain't never been in no court, never, no, sir, not me." And he said, "You wouldn't save their lives, they could be sent to the penitentiary." I said, "No, sir, no, sir." And that's all he said to me. About 7 o'clock the next morning, the police brought a subpoena for me to appear in court.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you had no choice then.
I went. So they had this trial, and this girl got up there and said these men attempted to rape her, blah, blah, blah. So the lawyer said, they called my name. So the jury said, where was you? I said, I was at the hospital. They said, what you know about this case? I said, I don't know nothing about it. And the lawyer said, Judge, may I ask her a question? He said, yes. He said, do you know this woman? I said, yeah, I know. He said, what you know about her? I said, I know she stole my shoes and stockings. She got all my shoes now.
So now.
The judge said, back inside.
So some of those nursing students broke out of that strictness and got into trouble.
Got into trouble.
You know, it's surprising that only four out of your class of 15 actually made it. Uh-huh. Did the others find it too difficult to make it through, or they got married?
They went haywire. And out of the four, the three of us living.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Who were the other two?
The other two, she was from Dublin, Georgia. She lives in New York now. She lost her sight. She's totally blind, but very, very cheerful, and calls me periodically. And
what's her name?
Her name is Claudia Linda. Mm-hmm. And the other one lives in Miami. And about 3 months ago, I was sitting there, and the car drove up. And these folks got out. The lady came and she said, yeah, this is her, this is her. Come on. And I opened the door and she said, how you doing? I'm so glad to see you. Horn, and she just kept talking to me. And she looked at me and she said, Horn, you don't know who I am, do you? And I said, I sure don't. She said, this is Louise. I said, Louise Thornton, a classmate. And we graduated in 1924.
And how long since you had seen Louise?
Oh, Lordy, I guess about 25 or 30 years.
So you have kept in touch with your friend in New York, though?
Yeah, she called the periodical. Now, she has a niece in Miami, and she always come here and spend time with me. And she went, and then one day I see them two dolls there, the crocheted dolls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This package came in from Miami, and then she said who she was, and I said, well, she didn't put no price on them. So then I wrote and thanked and told her she didn't tell me what the price was. And when a classmate called me, and I told her, I said, your niece sent me these. I said, but she didn't tell me the price. She said, there's no price. So that's a token of appreciation for kindness. But now she's blind. She's very active in church. Go to church and everything, and be send me a program where she's chairman of a program and everything.
Now, did they also stay and work at charity for a while after they graduated?
No, neither one of them.
They both went.
Mm-hmm. One of them was from Athens, Georgia. She worked in Atlanta, and finally she went to Miami and did public health there, and she retired. And this other friend who's blind, she went to New York. When there was such a demand for nurses, even here, because I was president of the State Nurses Association then, and they wrote me and asked me to recommend anybody, and also had it open for me, but I wasn't interested because I was doing public health.
Mm-hmm.
And quite a few of them went. And this friend of mine, classmate of mine, she went and she stayed. And after she retired, she bought one of those co-op apartments in New York. Mm-hmm. And that's where she lives now.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go to trace your progress through this nursing career. When you came back from Macon and you got the job as the assistant to the director, what was your wages like at that time? Do you remember?
It was $35 a month.
And about how many hours a month did you work?
Just, I was on call anytime.
Was it 12-hour shifts still?
Even at night, I'd call. Like an emergency come in, somebody cut or something, I'd go in and check and switch them up.
Did you live again? Did you live at the hospital?
Lived at the hospital.
And so most of the nurses, the RNs, lived there at the hospital as well as the students?
Mm-hmm. It didn't have but one RN then, other than students.
There was only one RN?
I mean, the superintendent of nurses was RN, and then and I was the assistant, and the other were students.
So you were an RN, were you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So you were the only two licensed nurses there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So all the training classes were given by doctors.
Doctors, yeah, and nutrition. She told it at the high school here. I don't remember her name, was Miss Kenia McDowell. Mm-hmm. She told
the nutrition.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This tape has come to an end, Elizabeth.
divorce. And she didn't live very far from me, and I went by there and left a note and told her where the checks was. And from that day until I left Washington, I never had to go back for a job. She recommended me. There was a lady working for the state, the United States, and she lived next door to this lady. I never seen her or anything. She told her about me. I would go there and clean up and everything. I told her I had my mother and those down south. That lady would leave me clothes, shoes, stockings, and everything. Never seen her today.
Never saw the lady.
Never saw her. And then, as I said before, when the superintendent called me and told me this job was vacant, I was recommended. I came in. When I went to the health department, the assistant health officer told me, he said, "Now, we're going to put your application on the table." But he said, "I don't want to discourage you." He said, "But we have 150 applications ahead of yours."
Now, what year was this?
In
1930. Oh, so you were not in Washington very long before you got the call to come back for this public health job.
He said,
so you had to make the long trip back not knowing whether you'd even get the job.
No. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know that I was in Washington.
Oh, okay.
I was there just temporarily, in other words, trying to make an honest living. And so he told me that there was 150 applications ahead of mine. But when the board met, I was appointed. And this was in 1930. They paid $90 a month and furnished you a car and the upkeep of it. And they told me that I was never to run out of gas. If I did, I was responsible. I worked 25 years and I bought 1 gallon of gas. I ran out one time.
And did you have to buy your own gas?
No, the kind of furnished the gas and everything. But they had their own service station.
Okay.
And they said if I ran out of gas.
You were on your own.
Uh-huh. And I bought 1 gallon in 25 years.
Well, I'm just curious, when you had to leave Charity at that time, were people leaving that hospital?
No, she was leaving everywhere because they couldn't get any work or any money. And if you got to work, they couldn't pay you. There was no money in circulation.
But the public health, that was the county? Was that Chatham County?
Yeah, Chatham County.
Was that considered a good wage for that day and time?
At that time, that was a good salary. $90 a month in 1930. Mm-hmm. That was a good salary.
And you mostly made home visits on that?
I was employed as a school nurse. And the main of it was prevention.
Okay.
I gave immunizations and all of that, and in schools.
So you went through the different schools?
I went through the whole Chatham County schools. I had 15 schools. I made three a day. Mm-hmm. And I got great grandchildren. A man came Saturday. He lives in New York. And they had their family reunion, and I'm always invited, but I had him to know I couldn't physically attend, but he came to see me Saturday, and when he got ready to go, he gave me $10. And that's been more than 35 years ago. But they always remembered. His mother had 11 children, and they were going to school, and any kind of communicable disease, you had to isolate them, and they couldn't go back to school or anything, and nobody could visit them. So one of these children, I forgot what it was she had, but anyway, I had to isolate them. And if you isolate them, then nobody to go in and out. The county is responsible for your upkeep of food or whatnot. So I told the mother, I said, "Now, if you need anything, any food, anything," I said, "don't fail to let me know." And she told me that, she said, "You know, my husband," she said, "he's very stiff." She said, he, She said, but we don't have food. I said, come on, I got a list. I said, give me a list of what you want. And she did, and I carried her the food, and when we lifted the fumigation and everything, she told me, she said, now, don't bring me no more now. She said, let somebody else who need it. And she wrote the county a letter, county commissioner a letter, thanking them for it and everything.
But you had done that on your own.
But it was through the county. It was
okay.
For the county.
Okay, it was for the county.
And anybody that needed, just let's say you didn't have social service and welfare mm-hmm. then like you do now. Mm-hmm. If I saw there was somebody hungry or children or anything, I could go to the county commissioners and get an order for food or what have you, or clothes or what have you. Like that's been 62 years ago.
Mm-hmm. What part of town did you end up settling in then? Is this the area of town you lived in during the
30s? I finally bought a home on 629 West 39th Street.
So you were living in the Brownsville neighborhood?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I still own that house.
That was back in the...
And I've owned it 55 years.
When did you move out of that neighborhood?
I moved out in 68.
Okay.
So her name will be in that book that we looked up 39th Street. Me too.
That's right. We're doing some research in the city directories to see who used to live on some of the streets in that neighborhood.
Yeah, 629 West 39th. I still own that property. Mm-hmm.
So you... lived there, she said, for...
I lived there 31 years.
31 years. Mm-hmm. How would you describe that neighborhood? Because we're also interested in the neighborhood.
It was a very nice neighborhood. It was mixed, colored and white. Because the house that I bought, white folks built it and everything. And most of it was white when I moved there. And one time it was a very, very nice neighborhood. But when they built Camp Stewart down here, and that's in Liberty County. Liberty County is noted as Negroes owning more property than Liberty County and any other county in Georgia.
Oh, I didn't think that.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And so the government took a lot of their property, see.
To build Camp Stewart.
Uh-huh. And these folks came in here, a lot of them, and bought property, investing. And across the street from me, one family bought two houses and rented them. And one of those houses, a man was a bootlegger, and he had men working for him. He's sitting up on the porch, cross-legged, saying he didn't have two cars and didn't have to pay no income tax or anything. And the police, he was paying off to the police.
That was during Prohibition.
He was paying off to the police to the extent the police would come every week to collect. And one week they came and they stayed in there. And they were notifying them that the revenue was coming in on them. And they were paying off to the police. And the police wanted more money. And they stayed there so long. So one of the neighbors told me, said they was paying them $50. They had to get them up $100.
So you had some interesting neighbors in that neighborhood.
And so then... when I really was investigating, I found out the police was involved in it. Chief of police too at that time.
Did you do investigating?
Sure, I investigated and found out the police, they were paying off to the police. Mm-hmm. And a man got killed in the lane. And I had to put my car up in the lane. And about 4 years later, they hollered, the man died in 40 things. He was the one who killed that man in 39th Lane.
So there was some violence going on in the streets back then,
too? Yeah, back then. Because I moved up out of there in 68.
Now, you said that a lot of people who moved into the area were people who had to sell out in Liberty County.
But this is what they did. They bought this property and reinvested and put it up renting. And when you get a neighborhood rented, that lowers the value.
And do you remember about what time it was that Camp Stewart was getting built up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can find that out if you don't remember.
I don't remember at all.
You're talking about Army Base, right?
Yeah, when it was built. What year it was built. We'll look that up. That'll be easy to find out. That's very interesting insight.
insight, though, on how that neighborhood started to change, maybe.
And then, now when I moved away from there and come out here, the lady that lives in that house, I've been living there 24 years. She's been there ever since.
The lady you rent to?
Mm-hmm. And I don't go to collect. And I don't say she brings it on time, but she brings it. And she keeps that place beautiful. Mm-hmm. Beautiful furniture and everything in there.
Oh, that's wonderful. You mm-hmm. have such a good tenant.
And now a lot of folks tell me that I'm renting it too cheap. But now for somebody to stay in the house 24 years, you don't have to collect the rent or anything.
And keeps it in excellent condition. It's well worth it.
And see, the next thing about it is, somebody come in there and tear it up, and then you have to pay $1,000 or more, and then it'd be empty.
You'd lose a lot more. Mm-hmm. But you're fortunate to have such a That's good person true. Staying there.
The nicest person. And the nicest person, when she moved in there, she was paying $55 a month.
Well, what made you decide to leave out of there in 1968? It sounds like it was a nice home.
Yeah, it's a nice, still nice home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the rooms are much larger than these here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because this room here, you see, I made an addition to it. Yeah. From here back.
Oh, I can see. Uh-huh. Yeah, so you enlarged it.
Yeah, and put on a bath there. Now, I have another friend that lived across the street from me, and she moved out here, and she told me, she said, you can come out here and say, but you're not going to be able to adjust yourself to these rooms. They're so small. And the rooms where we were a nice, large room.
The older house.
Older house, uh-huh, right. There was a lot uh-huh. of big houses over that side.
Uh-huh. The next thing about it is the rooms, the ceilings are so high, it's hard to heat.
And cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hard to heat. So that was one of the things. That
one of the things. More economic to mm-hmm, be in a small house.
Mm-hmm. And the main thing was that why I wanted to move was my garage was in the lane. Mm-hmm. And I bought a new car and everything, and I said,
you
I just can't.
Sold it.
Uh-huh. And I couldn't. Mm-mm.
You were feared it was starting to get to be a scary part
yeah.
of town.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, all those years that you lived there, did you have any... keep any connection with the charity hospital?
Yeah, always.
Mm-hmm. What did you do in relationship to the hospital?
Go to the hospital and whatever needed to be done, I was right there.
Because you were working as a public health nurse.
From public health nurse.
Until what year?
Until 55.
Okay.
And the reason I retired was I had a heart attack.
In 55.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I didn't work for some time. But as I improved, I started doing some part-time work mm-hmm. at George Infirmary.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because when I was working with the county didn't have Social Security.
So you couldn't collect nothing.
So you weren't getting
work
a
part
pension
time,
for
like
25 years?
No, I could get a pension, but not the Social Security.
Okay.
So the Social Security I get now is I worked it up after I had my heart attack.
But how would you be involved with charity then? What kind of things did you do? You said you'd go over there and help them out.
Anything I could do, I was there to do it. And then we had the Charity Hospital alumni, and that's what we were there to do. And we would, anything we saw needed for an instant, we'd buy linen or whatever we saw needed to be done.
So the alumni were all the graduates?
All the graduates.
The nurses training?
Yeah, even the ones out of town, because most of them were from out of town.
And they would send money?
Yeah, to the alumni.
Did you have meetings?
Oh, yeah. They had a treasure, too.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we made contributions to the hospital and checked the needs and everything. And one of the main needs was linen.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what year Charity Hospital closed? Because I can remember as a little girl, my grandmother and my mother taking me and my cousin over to get our shots and everything.
But that that was, you were coming to a clinic then.
It was a clinic, okay, so it already had closed then.
No, they had a clinic.
No, but that clinic was not connected with the hospital. That clinic was run by the Savannah Federation of Colored Women.
Okay, so something different, okay.
And you look up there, that the plaques up there from Savannah Federation of Colored Women.
Yeah, I see it right there.
Mm-hmm. So you were a member of that organization?
I remember of that, the local, the state, the regional, and the national. And I got a certificate, a plaque the other day from the state where I've been a member 50 years and hadn't missed a meeting in 50 years.
Oh, congratulations.
That's right.
Amazing, and they have their meetings around the state.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We have, see, in the state now. Now I haven't been able to go to meetings since I've had these attacks. But the last meeting was in Macon, and the next one will be in Milledgeville. Mm-hmm. Then you have the region. The region takes care of 8 states, mm-hmm. and they're southern state. Then you have the national, and I made them all.
So it just rotates around the states in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a national organization. Yeah. The state chapters.
Right.
And how he was organized, Mrs. Terrell in Boston saw the need where they were putting youth in jail or in prison with older criminals, and she saw the need for an organization, and she came down to Washington, and they organized it.
When was that?
And that was in 1896.
Oh, so they're approaching their 100th anniversary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so these are women who are involved in helping their communities.
Helping their community, and they've just all made progress and everything. In other words, they we get bigger and better physicians. And well, I guess we could say we was a little, they knew we had some political influence, and when somebody was running, oh Lord, I got letters here to be presidents and what would write me and everything to, you know, support them and everything. Miss came across a letter the other day from what's her name? Carter.
Mrs. Carter.
Rosalind Carter. And then Mr. The next one. Because she came, we met in Atlanta, and she, the national met in Atlanta, and she came down. And I got all these letters and everything from, you know.
You were, I'm sure you were involved in being an officer. Were you an officer?
No, I never, I just like to work and everything. Now, for instance, with the state, they say you have a first and second vice president and everything. I'm not giving myself any credit or anything, but I do know parliamentary usages. Mm-hmm. And in organizations, you should know it and whatnot. And then with the state, I knew it was past my time to become president, but they maneuvered politics and everything, and I showed them expressions because I never was that sort of person. All I want to do is give service.
Mm-hmm.
But when they put me in, the lady got up and said, told them the kind of person I was, and she said, now it's past due, and everything, and she said, when they maneuvered and everything, she said, Ms. Horn never showed any, even facial expression of dislike or anything. I never missed a meeting or anything. Because I'm not looking for prestige. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted my work to speak for me.
And were you, this clinic at Charity that the Federation started, did you help them with that idea?
Oh, yeah.
Or help develop?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
When did they start?
Now,
that?
When I first went with the county, the doctor that started that clinic was a Dr. Gleaton, and Dr. this other pediatrician he did. Now, they were all white.
Mm-hmm.
and they were giving their service, and it was at where College Street School was and everything. Mm-hmm. And finally,
they had a clinic there.
Yeah, and these white doctors came and gave their service, mm-hmm. and everything.
Giving inoculations.
Yeah.
To children.
Mm-hmm. 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 Babies and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Doctor, oh Lordy. Dr. Gleason was the main one, and this other doctor, all name it on animal tongue, but anyway, he married Millsby Lane's daughter, old shot. But they were the beginning of it, and finally, then the blacks started coming in.
Doctors.
Yeah, and giving the immunization and everything. But the Savannah Federation is the one that started it.
The one at charity.
It was at Kyler before it came to charity.
So, at first there were, you mentioned a doctor from the county, a white doctor.
And with the clinic, with this baby clinic, it was not the county, it was the Savannah Federation.
So you all started the clinic at the Kyler location.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There again, Rem Braithwaite too, he worked beautiful with that.
And that was one of your suggestions, the need for a baby, did you say baby clinic?
Mm-hmm.
Focused on
mm-hmm.
getting immunizations
mm-hmm.
for?
Yeah, and just like, you know, mothers, now for instance, with the city and county, they had a clinic, and they used to have midwives.
Mm-hmm.
And if a mother didn't go to the clinic and get a permit, a midwife couldn't deliver her. And some of them wouldn't go. And out there in that county, mm-hmm. they would stay right there and have those babies. And one Monday I came home and I'd always get my calls. And I called and they gave me a call on Fair Street. And I got there after 3 o'clock Monday. That lady was laying in the bed. No midwife was going to touch him because it's against the law if they didn't have a permit. That lady was laying in the bed. The baby and the afterbirth was right between her legs. And said she had it 3 o'clock that Sunday.
Mm.
I took care of that. I cut that cord. I took care of that mother and baby. And this was on a Monday. And I went back that Wednesday. When I went back Wednesday, the baby's cord was off and this is clear. And that woman didn't run a temperature. The saying is that God takes care of babes and fools.
But you must have seen a need for babies to get immunizations. You saw that as something that was lacking in part of the neighborhood,
yeah.
part of the city.
Uh-huh.
Now, how did you get the parents to bring their babies into these clinics?
Well, you go, you say for this, just like I see that woman or others, and I tell them, I'd give them a point, I'd give them a slip where they could go to the clinic and everything. Then and if they went and everything, then they'd give me a follow-up on it.
Okay, so as a public health nurse, you could do that in some of your
yeah.
rounds, mm-hmm. tell people to go.
And then I had, in the schools, the doctors did a physical, children with dental defects or tonsils or whatnot. I could get their tonsils out mm-hmm. free. And I'd usually take 3 children at a time. I'd take them on a Thursday, and they'd remove the tonsils Friday, and I'd take them back home Saturday. And one lady, I took her two children and brought them back, and they got along all right and everything. So in recent years, she said, Ms. Horn, you know what? She said, we didn't know how to appreciate you all or you. She said, now here are my grandchildren. My children got to pay all that money. And I didn't even go to the hospital. You come got them and carried them and brought them back home. She said, we just didn't have the sense of appreciation that
now
we should have.
Was that the county or the federation paying?
County.
The
county.
County paid for some of that.
School.
And so charity then was just the site for this clinic after it moved from Kyler
yeah.
for the
infants mm-hmm. And now when I take those children to have their tonsils out and everything, that the county paid for that through the hospital.
And those would either go to charity or Georgia Infirmary?
But most of them went to charity.
Okay. So there were a lot of children in the hospital in those years.
Yeah. And then now with the dental, there was they had a dental clinic, but it was so overcrowded and everything. I'd work up at a school, a large school, a lot of children, and the Federation would pay for it. And I would, I couldn't take them all in my car. I'd get a bus from the Board of Education and take a day mm-hmm. and take children to the dentist. And the Federation would pay for it.
Because the county was overloaded, it sounds like. They couldn't handle everything in mm-hmm. the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
Pay for it.
So.
Thomasina, have you thought about any other questions?
Enjoying listening. The difference between now, and, I mean then and now.
Oh, Lordy, honey.
It's tremendous.
Such a difference. And you see, back then, everything was free. I mean, so far as I was concerned. Now the public health nurse is supposed to charge. They don't always get it, but they got to tell the patient. Charge for a visit.
Charge the patient?
Yeah. If they can get it. Some of them don't think they try.
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, they.
Isn't it on some kind of sliding scale though? If the patient is indigent and can't pay, would they get a free visit?
No, they wouldn't. If the indigent everything, they wouldn't.
Wouldn't have.
Mm-mm.
But still, before it was everyone.
Yeah. Everything was free. And then one time it used to be, the Metropolitan used to have nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And they discontinued them.
Metropolitan
Insurance.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
If you made it Metropolitan, you made out, you know, application and everything. The Metropolitan paid for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's been out of existence
mm-hmm.
for a long time. I'd hate to get a Metropolitan patient because all that writing, and you know what the records are.
You have to turn in all the forms.
Mm. Yeah.
All that.
Ooh.
Well, just another kind of general question on the charity hospital. I guess you were around when they were constructing the new building. You weren't working there, but you saw.
I wasn't working there. I was at the county then,
right.
But I'd go by and everything. I knew the man who had the contract. He was from Central, Mr. Grant.
Yeah, I've read.
Mm-hmm.
How would you say in general that charity was involved with the local neighborhood, with the surrounding street of that area?
I think they were well involved. And you had clubs that would be interested. They would, you know, like women clubs, and they'd come visit the hospital and see a need.
Okay. So the community was raising funds,
mm-hmm.
And your group, for example, the Alumni Association,
mm-hmm.
providing rentals. Was that association just for nurses who graduated, or also for LPNs?
No, there was no LPNs then.
Okay. I meant to ask you that. In the 20s and early 30s, there were
no nurses' aides. The only thing then was a midwife.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But those midwives did a beautiful work, and I hated to see it go down, because biblically, the Bible tells you about midwives.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Yes.
And in most cultures throughout the world, women are midwives.
Midwives.
Women help women.
Uh-huh.
Childbirth.
You see, man, he's gotten so smart. He thinks he's smart. Now they're trying to work it back in to put midwives back on. There's a dire need for midwives.
I know, because midwives stay much more close with the mother
than
pregnancy
uh-huh.
and personalized care.
Before I ever thought of any training or anything, there was a white lady, her name was Miss Nora Coley, and she had a delivery, and after the delivery, she kept hemorrhaging. And I remember she was a tall lady, and she hemorrhaged, and her hands were just as pale. She'd lost so much blood. And the doctors then used to go to the homes, and the doctor's name was Dr. Tom Walker from Cochran, Georgia. And he came, and he told her husband that he had done everything he could for her. And he told us, and I tell you what, he said, he told him where the midwife was. He said, she's an old lady, said, you go get her. And the husband went and got her, and she on a Sunday morning, we didn't live very far from them, and they sent down there and got mother. And my mother said, the old lady told her, I want you to cook me a thick whole cake of cornmeal bread. And she packed that lady. In 2 weeks' time, that lady was doing fine. Doing fine.
Now, how did this old woman treat this?
Taking cornmeal and packing it inside her vagina? She
bleeding on? Mm-hmm. She had mama to cook this big old loaf of, didn't bake it hard, just, you know. Mm-hmm. And then when it got cold enough, she packed her with it.
And this doctor didn't know what to do, but the old
he told us, her husband, that he had done everything he could.
Now, that woman probably would have died without the help of this midwife. Uh-huh. Sure.
This was, at least I know it's been about 73 or 4 years ago.
But those midwives, that's what they did. That was their specialty. Mm-hmm. Unlike the doctor, who's doing so many other things. Mm-hmm. They probably, like this woman, knew so much. They were such a resource. Back in the mid to late 1970s, I was a social worker in rural North Florida, and there were still granny midwives practicing, licensed by the local health department. And most people I worked with had their babies at home with the midwives, and everything was fine.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Yeah. But
now it's changed.
But I see now they're trying to bring them back. Biblically, the Bible tells you about these midwives. Now that's, I think, man's just trying to get too smart, huh? But I tell you what, dogs, they are smart. Now, for instance, I have been having these blood clots in this right leg. And the first one hit my lung, my right lung. Then the next one hit it. And the other day, I had to go back to the hospital on the 3rd of July. And when I went to the doctor, and he said, Ms. Horn, I can make a diagnosis, but I want proof of it. He said, you've had another blood clot. He said, I want you to go to the hospital, and I'm going to write a note and let them do this x-ray and everything, and to be sure. And if it's true, he said, I'm going to keep you in the hospital. So he told them to call him, and they kept me in the hospital. So then he called a council, had 4 doctors, and don't ask me the doctor's name, but I know he was a foreigner, and he recommended surgery. He went into a vein in my groin. I'm talking about myself now. He went into this vein in my groin, and he showed me he had a valve that he put in the vein. And he told me that these clots started making up around my toes, and that this valve, when they start get so far, it scattered them and it wouldn't hit my lungs again. Mm-hmm. Now, I was afraid of the surgery to an extent, but it was local because they did it on a Novocaine. It was just like a little pin stick, and you would have thought that I'd had to have some for pain after. I haven't had the first pain or nothing.
Incredible. Mm. The advances that have been made are amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it'll be interesting to look at medical schools. I'm sure the number of women in medical schools has gone, it's become more open to them. They weren't permitted in medical schools, women or minorities, for many years.
For
white males had an
except for I think Howard University and one other mm-hmm. were the only institutions where black doctors could get trained.
They just knew I was going to call for pain. I haven't had a fresh pain.
When did they do that?
This was, let me see, I went in the hospital on the 3rd. Let's see, Saturday was the 4th. On the 7th of July.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
There's
so many.
But now, aside from that, I've had other complications. I got gout, and I had a kidney infection. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're late. Not 89 years old. Mm-hmm. But now back to this cough that I used to heard me coughing. Mm-hmm. I had this cough 40 years ago, mm-hmm. and I was doing public health, and one of the white nurses. She said, look, but I just don't feel that these doctors are not reaching your case. She said, I tell you, when you go on your vacation, I want you to go to New York, to Prestige Hospital in New York. And they'll find out what's causing it, this cough. Because mm-hmm. nothing wasn't doing it any good. And I went to Prestige Hospital, and the first day I was there, I said, 9 doctors saw me. Mm-hmm. And finally, they transferred me to Mount Sinai Hospital up in the Bronx. When they discharged me, they never gave me a pill or liquid medicine or anything. They told me that I didn't need any medication, that it was something that would wear off. Now, it wore off. Now, here just recently, it came back. Nothing is doing it any good. But now, see, it's not wearing off now like it did then because I was younger. Mm-hmm. And I had a stronger constitution than I have now. Mm-hmm. But it just comes spasmodically. And then it goes. There's no cold or nothing. Just bring up some mucus. Right.
But it goes. Seems to come and go.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like you've spent most of your life taking care of other people's health problems. It's time for some people to take care of you.
Okay. Yeah. They've been beautiful taking care of me. Because all did I realize. As many bedpans as I've emptied and everything.
Oh, that's right.
When I had this fresh blood clot, I could say on your back for 15 days, and a bedpan. And I'm heavy, and oh my Lord.
Bedpan ain't the most comfortable thing.
Huh?
I said, I know that bedpan wasn't the most comfortable.
It surely was. Ooh. And here the other day when I was in the hospital, I got constipated and had to give myself. And they put me on a bedpan, honey, and that bedpan ran over.
Oh, no.
No,
well, I have one more quick question for you about charity, Elizabeth. There's a photograph at the Georgia Historical Society of a group of nurses at charity from 1935. Now, it will cost about $18 for me to get them to give me a copy of that photograph.
Really?
And I only wanted to get it if I thought I could find someone who would know who those nurses were, because just the picture without any names wouldn't be that useful for this exhibit on charity. But if I could get the picture...
I believe I have. But I haven't been able to go through. I know I got a... I got a group.
Maybe you have a group.
Uh-huh. And then I have a group. And I believe I have that material. I believe it's in a box under that bed in there. But I haven't been able to. I have.
And that would be a lot of effort for you to get it. I wonder if you... came back to our Thomas, maybe she could help you. Would you be interested in looking through it? We don't want
to. Let me tell you what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Look under that bed and see if you don't see a flat box.